page. I'm Dave Parkinson, delighted to be alongside the gaffer, James Gordon. I need to think of a better title for you, I think. I keep calling you gaffer every week.
I've been called worse, Dave, to be fair. We'll go with that for now.
What have we got coming up? Well, we're recording an audio version of this as well, because we're trialling something regarding getting it out as a podcast as well, if people prefer to listen to it elsewhere, maybe on the commute to work or whatever, because obviously you can't sit there with your phone, can you, when you're driving? You get picked up by the police out of all things, and it's a big no-no, isn't it? So what we're going to talk about in this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about some of the news. So Adam Walker's drug ban, meeting people from Toronto, that was myself in midweek, Ryland's resigning from the NTL, Keith Lacouga's looking to recruit a new commercial manager, Barrow setting up a Just Giving page for a trip to Toronto, Bradford's relegation, we'll look at all what happened in last night's game between Wakefield, Trinity and Leeds Rhinos, and look forward to the weekend's action. So we've got plenty to discuss, really, haven't we?
Yeah, as usual.
As usual. So let's start off. First of all, we talked at some length last week about Rangi Chase and his issues and being banned for cocaine use. Adam Walker, the Scotland forward, the man that had just been signed by Wakefield, has also copped a ban as well now. Ironically, from the same game.
Yeah, that was the interesting sort of twist to it all, wasn't it? It was after the same game. I know Gary Schofield said in The Sun that he thinks there's a bit of a wider problem within the game. So whether that's the case, I guess we'll come to the fore in the coming months, I guess.
I mean, it's disappointing, isn't it? Because this time last year, he was far and away Hull Kingston Rovers' best forward. In a lot of ways, he's coming into the best years of his career. He got signed at St Helens. Unfortunately, it didn't quite work out for him there. He was resurrecting himself for this season over at Wakefield. And, of course, looking forward to a World Cup appearance. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's, you know, he's only got himself to blame, really. And it's only him that's losing out from it. You know, he could have been going to Australia for 5 or 6 weeks in the autumn and playing in the World Cup. So, you know, there's not really much more to say other than that.
You can't really, other than saying you've been silly though.
Yeah.
You've been silly. And to be fair, does it beg the question that you should maybe have more drug testing going on in rugby league?
Well, I'm not 100% sure how it works. I know a couple of players get pulled after every match, don't they, on a random selection sort of basis. So, you know, you do wonder whether other players slip through the net. But, you know, I mean, I think it's getting fairly regulated across all sports, isn't it? You know, so I would imagine that you probably won't be able to get away with it for too long if you are a regular user and abuser, so to speak.
What about the punishments? You know, because obviously we've just watched the World Athletics Championships, and the guy that won the 100 metres had been banned twice from that sport. We've had examples of players that have been banned once or twice over the course of their careers. What do you think from a...
I guess there's a few issues with it. There's obviously, you know, the performance enhancing side, which presumably cocaine isn't a performance enhancer. You know, it might give perceived benefits in some areas, but compared to, say, you know, other previous performance enhancing drugs. So there's that sort of thing, but there's also the moral issue of, well, you know, does someone deserve to be banned for life or for a long period for what could be just one mistake? Because there's so many questions there and so many variables. I would imagine they'll get the standard 2-year ban. But then at the same time, you've got Ben Barber, who's come over to play for St Helens, and I think he tested positive out of competition.
Yeah.
And got
a 12 match ban.
He got a 12 match ban. So you've got a few different, but again, that was different. It was out of competition. It wasn't during or after a game, and there's all sorts of variables with that. But you know, if you've done the crime, you've got to do the time.
What do you think about it? Drop us a comment. We're happy to accept all kinds of feedback, smiley faces. Otherwise, what do you reckon? Just let us know. And we'll see what we can do with regards to maybe doing further comment pieces, etc. Although we have got to watch it, haven't we, I suppose, to a certain extent. Moving on, I had the great pleasure on Wednesday night. I got bit to smithereens over in over in Saddleworth, you know, all up my arms, in my head, etc., etc., which is why I'm sporting the buzz cut. I was over at Saddleworth on Wednesday night with Lee East, my team. Great win for Saddleworth, by the way, 48 points to 4 in the National Conference League Division 2. But interestingly enough, I got chatting to a couple of guys that have come over from Toronto who have fallen in love with the game. They host a podcast over in Toronto called Wolfcast. And I was chatting to Dario after the game just regarding my love for rugby league and kind of like... he was asking my opinion on various things, and the one thing that he said that sort of kind of like really struck me, and we've spoken in our previous games, in our previous weeks, regarding how we build up our game and how we promote it, because Toronto have done an excellent job of building a brand, of backing it up. The figures all seem to come through, don't they, with the amount of people that are watching them, what they've set up. And they said that they fell in love with the fact that rugby league is so accessible compared with every other sport that's in the North American market. You can't get near to a player, and this is even if they're in like college football. So the fact that, you know, our players in rugby league will go and have a drink with the fans afterwards, they'll go and have umpteen selfies taken. You know, you've only got to look on Twitter after a Toronto game, and I'm sure Ryan Briley features on about 1,000 selfies every week, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Following it. And that's what they love about it. Do you feel that's something that really our game should really grab a hold of and say, listen, we are the working man sport?
I think obviously everyone compares it. I mean, obviously in the North American market, you know, NBA players and NHL players and stuff aren't accessible much like football over here, but ultimately that's because them players have a commercial value. I think that's the cynical view of it, really. I think that's why, it's because people pay money to get access to them players. But no, I think the general core of what you said, you know, we need to do more shouting about the good things rather than, you know, we seem to do a lot of messing around with the game and the format and all the sort of things we've been talking about recent weeks. We do a lot of messing around with that. You know, we spent, you know, during the licensing days, you know, everyone just spent all their time talking about whose stadium was better than whose and who had more fans than the others. And
it wasn't
like,
about what was on the field.
Yeah,
it?
And it's just like, and that's what, everything that seems to have been done over the last 10 years has been distracted away from actually what's happening on the pitch, really. You know, you should be talking about what teams are doing. We should be talking about, you know, what happened on the pitch more and more, or what's happening around the game, rather than all this like nonsense about, well, you know, why have we changed the structure again, and that's why I'm always an advocate of just keeping it as simple as possible, because that's the main selling point, and everyone agrees, is the main selling point is the game. The main selling point isn't, you know, it isn't the location, because, you know, obviously we've got quite a concentrated location, so that's not really a massive selling point.
Oh, I don't know. Saddleworth is lovely, providing you're not to death.
But,
you know,
with all due respect to everything, but, you know, it's not like we've got a team in the biggest 10 cities in England, for instance. So, but everyone agrees that the actual product on the field is far better than, say, rugby union or whatever sports people like. But we don't tend to do a lot of shouting, and that's why I got really frustrated the other year when Ryan, I think we mentioned this last week, but Ryan Hall scored the try at Huddersfield to win the League League Shield, and I just got so frustrated that the following year it wasn't used to market the game. You know, you got all the promos and you know, all the promos of on Sky or by the RFL or on Super League and whatnot. They just didn't use the video, and it was one of them where that's the thing really that we should be shouting most about. I think like say it's that's the thing, what you've got to do. And I think the thing with Toronto is it's pure at the moment, like that's all they've got to go with, you know, all they've got is the game and the stuff around it. And
but if they're accepting of it and are loving that, surely that's something that we can build off the back of.
No, definitely. I think
and promote it in
that
way.
I think part of the issue is everyone's got so cynical about the game, and everyone's got so, there's been so much stuff happening over this, you know, over the last 10 years or whatever, that people have got really cynical or negative about the game. And I think maybe there needs to be some sort of effort to turn that around.
And that's something that I know we spoke about before we actually went live today, you know, that they reminded me, these two guys that I met, you know, Dario and his mate, that it reminded me of what it was like when I first started watching rugby league, because you just love everything about it. The big hits, you're not really bothered looking at the scoreboard. You know, you're just sort of interested in seeing the tries, everything else that goes around the game, you know, how people celebrate and sort of the mingling amongst people. And, you know, maybe that is something that I sort of particularly adhered to, really, you know, and I'm sort of like, I think that it's really good. And I hope that they don't lose interest when games get closer, because they're going to be going up.
Well, I mean,
think
I think
they're going to be going up into the next division.
Well, I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? I think that's the argument, is that I think a lot of people are worried that people are going to be turned off because they're winning so heavily. So it's that almost like, it's almost like that, it's that fine line, isn't it, from going from winning heavily and that putting people off, to then either losing and that putting people off. So, but, you know, you've got to see what they do. So, see what happens.
See what happens. Okay. The next story that I just wanted to touch on, and seeing as we are, you know, based in Warrington, I'll certainly be looking at a little bit more from this story moving forward. But Ryland's resigning from the National Conference League. In a lot of ways, this points to the fact that there's a lot of difficulties in the amateur game in this country, because in that same division, Elland have recently quit as well. What do you see as the issue, really? Is there an issue as far
think,
as you see
I think the, I mean, I think generally, I think all sports struggle, are struggling a little bit with participation in on grassroots, certainly in an adult, because there's only so many things, there's obviously so much more to do now the days than there was. I think the summer, the switch to summer obviously hasn't helped, you know, in hindsight. I think that the fact of the matter is that in the summer people go on holiday, they've got weddings, they've got stag do's, whatever. They want to spend time with the family, you know, go out. And it's like, if you're playing rugby all day on a Saturday, it sort of takes away from that. So I don't know. I've seen a few murmurings of people saying that, that potentially is the issue, is one of the issues.
I know Rylands have been a little bit stuck for numbers. They called off a game on the 29th of July. They're due to go over to Dewsbury.
And that's the thing. I mean, I think if you think, David, like, people go on holiday in the summer, that's just a fact of life. And then obviously there's other games as well. You know, if the Super League's on, so it's like, well, if you're at a game on a Friday night, are you then going to waste your Saturday playing rugby as well? You know, when you've got family or things to do or work even.
Other coaches have suggested it's like a commitment issue, but I suppose it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because a lot of people have young families.
Well, it's one of them, Dave. If you're looking at the start of, you know, if you look at April and you say, right, we want you to commit to two or three nights or days a week to play amateur, so you might train twice a week and play on a Saturday. It's quite daunting, really, when you think, well, for the next, you know, throughout, from eight, you know, you've just come out of the winter where the weather's miserable, and at the start of April, you're basically saying, well, every Saturday, Tuesday night, and Thursday for the next 6 months is out. And I think that's the, whereas I think with the winter, it's like there's not really much else to do, and obviously getting in the clubhouse after a game and enjoying it. I don't know. I think there seems to be a lot of, I think again, it's one of them consequences of we've changed, the game's changed something. On a bit of a whim or because it thought it was the best idea without maybe looking at all the different permutations of it all.
One thing I do agree with is junior rugby happening in the summer, because that way they're playing in the best of the conditions, and if they're going to be stepping up into the pro game, which hopefully, you know, is the ultimate aim, isn't it, of course, of any amateur club, to create the next level of professional players that head off and play for the likes of Wigan, St Helens, Warrington, Widnes, any top level club that you can mention. That's the whole key, isn't it? You know, so I would agree with them maybe staying in the summer and having that experience. But yeah, maybe it could be time for the amateur clubs to start looking back to a return to winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one. And there's, I mean, the thing is you don't know. I mean, there was a spell where there was some winter and some summer, wasn't there? You just got to do the best that you can, really, with the situation. And it's whether there's enough, is there enough and push to make that change. And I think that's it. To be fair, I think rugby league has that. I think there's a lot of teams just stumbling along, struggling along, that they've not actually got the wherewithal or the power to be able to push it because they're that vulnerable.
Okay, right.
But obviously a big name, especially in Warrington, really, to be dropping out at that level.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope that it is only a temporary measure and that they're back out on the field as soon as possible. I am guessing that all the junior teams will carry on in their respective divisions, but it's just the senior team that's gone on a bit of a hiatus, really, I suppose. Right, our next story, Keith the Cougars, I like this. They've been a bit innovative, and they've always been a bit innovative, haven't they, since the mid-90s, Keithley. They're looking to recruit a new commercial manager, but they're combining that with the playing budget. So they're after a player commercial manager. Now, I've heard of player chairman. We had one at Lee way back when in the early 90s, Tony Cottrell. But have you ever heard of anybody that's had that sort of role and that sort of influence who's carried on playing? I suppose Andy Moulsdale over at Crusaders.
Well, I know. Well, Nick Fossard went to be commercial manager just after he'd stopped playing at Cass, I think. A few years ago, he did
I think it was just after, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite, to be fair, for a part-time club, I think it's quite a sensible move because then you can get the player almost effectively full-time within the club. And I think that's what some of these clubs need, is they need more bodies around. And if you're going to be spending money on a player, then why not tag it on to when you're off-field commitments and then make them a bit more, you know, instead of just have them turning up for training and playing on a weekend, have them as a key part of the club. The interesting thing is whether if he starts playing badly, whether he, you know, if he's the commercial manager and he's managed to bring in 50 grand's worth of sponsorship and then he gets dropped, you know, it's an interesting thing that, but, you know, like I say, that I think money's that tight that clubs have got to, they've got to look at different ways of doing things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's something that we've said before on sort of the media side of things, haven't we, regarding clubs. And I know you had a responded to article that you put out there about, you know, how clubs could help themselves, really. And I followed that up with regarding the community game as well and how I believe that could push forward as well with regards to going on. So I think that as a sport, because we're not as big as a football or these days a rugby union for participation levels, we've got to look outside the box generally, haven't we?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is these clubs have got to bring in revenue because they're playing players, you know, and that's the thing, it's whether if you're selling more tickets, more merchandise or more sponsorship, and it's one of them, and that just doesn't, it's not just going to happen. And I think that's part of this, and that was the point I was trying to make in my article, is that so many of these clubs, they just sat there expecting it to happen and it just won't happen anymore. And, you know, and you've got to go out there and, you know, make sure you're banging the drum. If you're not promoting your own games, then who is?
Interestingly enough, Keith Lake looking for a championship player or a Super League player, a guy with Super League experience to go and fulfil this role. So I suppose if you're watching this, you're getting towards the end of your career, you fancy the next step, then contact Keith Lake Cougars. I'm not on commission, by the way, although you could send some of my way. Right, next story. Barrow, now they're off to Toronto in a couple of weeks to play over there in Canada for the second time. We've already spoke about the benefits and how people fall in love with the game over there. Interestingly, they've come up with a statement via this Just Giving page, which suggests that what we were told with regards to Toronto covering all costs, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, logistically, I just think it's a complete nightmare. I mean, I can see, you know, obviously there's benefits to having Toronto and, you know, and fair play to them for doing it. But logistically, it's a nightmare, you know, especially with the Super 8s format. It wouldn't be so bad if they were just playing in a simple home and away league format. But, all, you know, this time next year, if Toronto get in the top four of a championship, you're looking at within 2 weeks' notice, you're arranging seven games that is potentially going to be, well, it is critical for a team being in Super League. So you take Warrington, for instance, or Catalan or Widnes and Lee, who are now, this time next year, two of them four teams will be going to Toronto at 3-4 weeks' notice. And it's like, you know, and the thing is that game could potentially have a massive impact on whether they stay in Super League. And don't forget, these are businesses that, you know, like if they drop out of Super League as a result of losing a match in Toronto where there's all these different variables that could affect them, you know, that's people losing their jobs and all that sort of palaver going on. So it is difficult. And like I say, I just worry about the long-term viability of it all. If, you know, we're in year one and already you've got clubs that are, you know, are scraping around for a couple of grand over there to sustain it. And, you know, you can't tell me that Super League chairmen are going to be overly happy about having to dig in their pockets to pay X amount of pounds to go over there, especially when you consider on the flip side, Toronto aren't going to be bringing any fans over, or they're going to be bringing very few fans. So whereas, you know, whereas a Wigan or a Warrington might expect to get 500 away fans or 1,000 away fans from pretty much anyone in the Super League, they're going to lose that revenue for them for that game. And then also on top of that, they're going to have these added costs. So it's a difficult one, and I think that it all points down to it being a logistical issue. You know, as much as it's great that we're the first sports have a transatlantic team, maybe there's a reason all the sports have transatlantic teams.
Okay. If you're a Barrow fan and you've contributed to this fund, let us know what your thoughts are. Or maybe if you're a League One fan, you've been over to Toronto, again, let us know your thoughts. How was it for you? I'd love to hear some other clubs' points of views, because they've been very vocal, Barrow, obviously, in getting this set up with the help of the supporters' trust.
Yeah, and don't forget, Barrow had problems last time they went over as well.
There was visa issues, yeah, weren't there, with a couple of other guys.
You know, and I think, and ultimately, these guys are just trying to play rugby. Mm. You know, that's it. That's the bottom line. And again, that's what we talked about before, about it being about on the pitch. All of a sudden, it's not about the pitch, because it's like Barrow's best team couldn't go to Toronto for various reasons.
Yeah. Okay. Bradford. The story, the saga, that is Bradford Bulls. Somebody's put them out of the misery. They're relegated. That loss against Toulouse. And it must be the longest night of the long knives ever this season for Bradford Bulls fans, because I get the feeling that they didn't even want to be in the Championship this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I mean, the bottom line is they should have done a lot better than they have. I think for all the crowing that you want to do about, I mean, I know obviously there's been this myth that's managed to develop over the season that they'd be saved, which isn't going to happen. But they won 5 of the first 7 games, and then they've won 1 of the next 17. I mean, what's happened there? They've had pretty much full-time team. They've had an NRL coach. You know, and you've got to ask your question, well, why? And obviously there's, you know, maybe, yeah, they should have dropped into League One, maybe. But then I still think they were well-equipped. They were still well-equipped.
Well, you look at the playing roster. They've got lads like Scott Moore on there.
Yeah, and they had Leon Price at the start of the season.
Willie Tonga. And
they're pretty much full-time, aren't they? And it's like they should, regardless of the minus 12, they'd wiped that out pretty much after 7 games. So they had 16 games where, they were on minus 2. But they had 16 games where if they'd have won even less than half of them, they'd have got out of the situation. So, you know, it's just another nightmare for them and for the fans, really.
And it's the fans that I ultimately do feel really sorry for. I mean, having been through, I won't say something similar, but I can equate to it, because Lee actually got relegated back in 2009 and were only saved thanks to Gateshead putting the white flag up and saying, we've paid a bit too much out here, can we take that hit?
Yeah, and it's... I mean, there's loads of problems, isn't there, floating around, because obviously they've got the court case with the former players and stuff, and you still feel that they're still a bit tied into the old regime a little bit, even though it's a new club. Mm. And it's like, would they be, even changing things like changing the logo or changing the brand even, you know, maybe that's what they should have gone for and just had, like a proper clean slate.
A proper start.
So it'd be interesting to see what happens next season. I mean, but bottom line is how many fans are being lost? You know, as much as we're talking about Toronto and all the other stuff and all the expansion teams about growing fans to Rugby League, but look at how many fans Bradford have lost.
Well, they averaged the last season in Super League, I think they averaged 7,500.
Which was down, don't forget. I mean, obviously,
they were 10,000, whatever. 12,000,
well, there, of course, yeah. And you look at it and you think, well, now next season, if they're averaging, 1,000, 2,000, and you're just like, how many people have been lost, and you've got to look at why that's happened.
And will those people ever be re-engaged?
It's not just Bradford. It's teams like Oldham and Halifax and Workington. I looked at a few of the attendances in League One, and Whitehaven used to get a good few thousand when they were, near the top of the Championship. Whereas now you look at, I think they had 800 last week, and it's just like, for all this stuff that we're trying to muck around with, to try and get more fans or more sponsors or whatever, we're sort of losing them quicker than we're gaining them.
What do you think, Bradford fans? Justified? Are you happy that you're going down to League One next season? Let us know. Right, let us move on to what happened last night on the field. Great, great win for Wakefield Trinity. 38-6 against Leeds Rhinos. I've got to be honest, I didn't see that coming.
No, brilliant, brilliant. They've really put the cat amongst pigeons, Wakefield, as well, because I think last week, you sort of thought, oh, maybe that top four will be the top four. And now they've just basically come down and said, well, no, actually, we're still here. We're still on the cusp. I think that lifts them back into the four, doesn't it? Before the games tonight. And obviously, St. Helens play Hull. So whatever happens there, it's going to be tight after tonight's game. And, you know, some of the tries Wakefield scored, I mean, the Gricks kick for that second try was brilliant, that Jones Bishop took down in the corner.
The break from Kyle Wood on the restart.
And for Gricks' try as well. And, you know, just year in, year out, Wakefield, I think I said this on Twitter last night, Wakefield are just like, year in, year out, they're just being honest. You know, they are who they are, and they're punching way above their weight. And, you know, and some other clubs in the league might be coming up with excuses, and I'd always point to the example Wakefield have set. You know, they're finishing top 8 2 years running, you know, with the lowest budget in the league. They just get on with it. They know what the situation is. They don't spend a great deal of time moaning about it. Obviously, they've got this issue with the stadium that they're trying to resolve. And, you know, imagine, you know, in five...
Do you think they're going to be there next season? Do you think that'll get a bit of a reprieve?
I think so. I can't see a scenario where they're going to chop Wakefield.
They talked about going to Dewsbury, haven't they, at one point?
Yeah, and well, I think that was what was going to happen last
year. I think
my impression was that was going to happen last year. And obviously, it seems to be coming out every year at the moment that that's what's going to happen, but it never does. I can't see them dropping out, to be honest, at all. And I can't see why. And on the flip side, you look at it and think, well, imagine where they could get to if in 4 or 5 years they do get, or in a couple of years they do get a new stadium. Because at the moment, you know, look, they're competing for the top four as they are. Imagine if they get into a new stadium. You know, Wakefield does a borough is quite a fairly sizable place. So imagine if they get the new stadium, add a couple thousand onto their gates, all of a sudden they could turn into, like, you know, year in, year out contender, you know, and that's, I'm sure that's what they're looking to do. But like you said, it sets it up nicely for the rest of the season.
I know we digressed a little bit, just talking off-field issues, or field issues, I suppose you could say, with regards to the stadium. Back on the field from last night, certainly one thing that I picked up was it was a night for the big fellas. You can say what you want about the likes of Gricks being really sharp, about welcoming Reece Lynn back and him having a really big influence out in the centres, but it was those big fellas in the middle. Keegan Hurst, 149 metres. David Fifita, 119 metres. Anthony England, 109 metres. And Tini Rowarona, 102 metres. I mean, they butchered the Leeds pack.
I think one of the things for Wakefield is they seem to have quite a good spread. So, going back to Gricks as well, I know Gricks he's been dropped for a few games recently, and they seem to have a squad where Chris Chester's not too concerned about moving them around, and it sort of keeps them on the toes a little bit. And it's the same with the forwards. They seem to have a few different forwards who can do a job, and that then means it motivates them a little more, because, you know, they need to put their hands up. There's no sort of guarantees that you're going to be in the 17, and you've got to put your hands up and play, and that's what happened last night. And I think Liam Finn said before, I think we ran the story on it, he said that they needed to wake up a little bit, and they certainly did.
He was fantastic last night, Liam Finn, by the way, just pulling the strings. He always sits that little bit further back, doesn't he? So not many people can get to him, but he just dictates. I think he's a great player.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, he can only do that on the back of the work that his forwards do, really. So I think, like I said, I think they're really honest side. You know, they're really honest.
If we turn that over to Leeds, the interesting thing looking at the stats was the amount of players that ended up with 40 plus tackles each, you know, so they really targeted the middle. And Callum Watkins as well, as one of the best strike centres in the competition, a guy that's got high hopes of heading off to the World Cup, he had to make 40 tackles. Now, he could go 3 games and not make 40 tackles. So that shows relentless planning and getting to the man, doesn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, they will have been disappointed with last week and the defeat at Huddersfield, and they would have known that this week they had to turn it around. And obviously they've really put Leeds under the pump. You know, and like I say, for Watkins to be doing that much work out wide,
that's unbelievable. I have never seen a tackle count like it for a
centre. And when you consider as well the way, you know, when you consider the forwards, the amount of metres the forwards made as well, it's not as if, you know, for a centre, it's not as if you can't say that they just stuck it up the middle. If Watkins is making that many tackles, it looks like Wakefield have asked questions all along the line. Mm. And obviously, Leeds have just not had the answers whatsoever.
And interestingly, looking at the stats, like I like to do, metres made, almost 1,500 metres made in the game for Wakefield, compared with less than 1,000 for Leeds. And I can't remember the last time I looked at the stats in Super League. and saw Leeds make less than 1,000 metres a game. I mean, it's regular for teams like Lee and Widnes. You look down the list and they just got schooled, I think, last night.
Yeah, and like you say, metres win matches.
Okay. What it does highlight is the job that Chris Chester and John Keir are doing. I mean, John Keir's recently signed a new contract.
Yeah, new deal this week, yeah.
I think that's a bit of fantastic news for Wakefield, to be honest.
I think it was a good little setup, actually. I mean, Chris Chester came last year without Keir and did a good job. Let's not undersell his role in the whole...
Oh, I think he's a really underrated
thing. Yeah. But I think the way that... I mean, if you look across Super League, there's a lot of rookie coaches, or there has been a lot of rookie coaches over the last few years. And I think what Wakefield have done is they've taken an experienced coach in John Keir, who's perhaps, you know, he's obviously past his days of being the number one in Super League, but they're using him in such a clever way where he can support Chris Chester and help mould Chris Chester into a top coach. And that's what's happening. Whereas you look at, say, Kieran Cunningham, for instance, at St Helens, who went in as a rookie coach with no real support. He had a few of his mates around him, you know, Sean Long, whatever. But he didn't have that someone with Super League coaching experience just to sound off, you know, just to give that support or, you know, that extra nouse, you know, the being there and done it sort. And actually, Kieran Cunningham's done it as a player, but it was his first job as a coach. And it's like, and I think that's where Wakefield have been really, you know, really shrewd. I don't know what Brian Noble's role is at Toronto, but, you know, you sort of feel like maybe he's doing a similar sort of thing with Paul Rowley. I know Paul's obviously had other jobs. But you look at, you know, you look at some of the other coaches in Super League, like Fraser New at Catalan, you know, Lee Radford at Hull, who's just starting to find his straps a little bit. Ian Watson had Tim Sheens at Salford last year. And I think it just goes to show that because there's not a massive wealth of quality coaches around as there was maybe 10, 15 years ago, that actually these clubs can get these rookies in and try and get an older head around them to try and kick it forward. And it's certainly worked with Ian Watson at Salford, and it seems to be working with Chris Chester at Wakefield.
I think it's always good, and, you know, certainly from my personal point of view, I think that having someone in the background and someone that you can rely on is always good. One of those sounding boards, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and like I say, I think it's just that experience, because these players, you know, they've been players and they've come out and finished it. I've seen it in other sports as well, where, you know, you've had really good players who finish and become a coach, and they just get a bit lost, and having that sort of guidance with them, you know, is quite important.
Okay, but well done, Wakefield, on the victory. Now let's move on to the fixtures that we've got this week. And in the Super 8s, well, Friday sees Salford take on Castleford, St Helens at home to Hull, and Huddersfield travelling over to Wigan. Your thoughts, first of all?
First and foremost, it's do or die for Wigan and Huddersfield. Whoever loses is done.
You think?
I think so now. I think if you look, they're both what? Whoever loses tonight is going to be a minimum of 5 points adrift with what, five to play?
Yeah, but there's still 10 points on offer.
There's still 10 points, but obviously everyone plays each other, don't they? And it's very unlikely that, don't forget, four teams will have to not get to that point. You know what I mean? So I just think, I honestly think it's whoever loses out of that tonight is going to find it so hard to get up. I mean, if you look, if St Helens win tonight and make up to 29, then there's 6 points adrift. Mm. You know, three. So they'd have to win three more games out of five. Three more games out of five than any of them other teams, and I think that'd be tall order.
You can certainly say, though, I mean, Huddersfield Giants are maybe of all the sides the form side in Super League, aren't they? Considering where they've come from.
I mean, if Huddersfield win tonight,
it's all on again, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if Huddersfield win tonight, they've basically completely they've got rid of that disadvantage at the start, and they're contenders. You know, they're contenders for that top four. And I think, you know, and like you say, they've got that little bit of momentum with them. You know, especially when you look at someone like Salford, who obviously play Casper tonight, Salford are sort of the other way at the moment, aren't they? And if they lose at home again tonight, all of a sudden they're going to be playing catch-up a little bit.
They're teetering a bit at the moment,
yeah,
aren't they, Salford?
And that's why I think the Saints-Hull game's an interesting one, because if Hull win, they're sort of opening a little bit of a gap again. So I think if Hull win, they'd go 3 points clear of fourth place Wakefield. Whereas if St Helens win, it bunches everyone up again, because Hull and Saints have 29, Wakefield will have 28, then you've potentially got Salford might have 28 if they win, and it bunches it all up a little bit. So the form teams are St Helens and Huddersfield.
Okay, let's lay our cards on the table. I'm going to lay down who I think is going to win tonight, and we'll have a look at this again next week. So I'm recording this now, so we'll catch up and give us your thoughts as well. I'm going for a Castleford win at Salford. I'm going for St Helens home advantage counting against Hull. And I'm going with a Wigan victory against Huddersfield, to be honest.
I think I'll match you on them three, Dave. I think Wigan are at that point where I don't think they'd slip up at home when they need to win. You know, I think they would be in well. They'd have been really disappointed with last week, and I certainly think, you know, if they lose tonight, I'm sure the fans will be turning against them a little bit.
Okay, moving into the qualifiers, two games on Saturday: Warrington at home to the Catalans Dragons, and a really interesting one down at Lee Sports Village. Hull Kingston Rovers, they'll fancy the chances. They won there in the Challenge Cup back in April, and they'll be keen to repeat it, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the games. I mean, Hull KR, first and foremost, they'll be looking to win their four home games. Because if you win your four home games, you're pretty much guaranteed £1 million game. And that'll be the minimum that Hull KR are looking for. If they can pull off a win at Lee, then all of a sudden, you know, they're looking at... I think if you win five, I think you're pretty much guaranteed top three based on
that's
the previous years. Yeah, yeah. So if they can pick off Lee this week and then win the other three home games, they've got over the line and they're in Super League again. Lee seems to have picked up a little bit. Obviously, they've won two on the spin now. So we talk about this momentum thing. They've sort of picked it up from nowhere because they've not won for ages. And then they had that one over Salford. They were pretty comfortable against Featherstone last week.
I was quietly impressed with that against Featherstone last week.
Yeah,
it's notoriously a difficult place to go. And Featherstone didn't lie down. They gave as good as they had, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think, don't forget, Lee switched it on for last year. They learnt from 2015. They switched it on last year and they got up quite comfortably last year. So they know their way through the qualifiers now. I still fancy Lee for that one, to be honest.
Have you noticed that I didn't actually highlight?
I was wondering why you just waiting for me to go through. I think Lee will win that one. I think it'll be a massive win for Lee if they win it.
Yeah.
Because they've already, like we say, we go back to this four wins. You know, the four wins to get you in the £1 million game. They've already won away at Featherstone. If they win tomorrow, they've won one of their three home games. So they're on course for a minimum of four wins after that. So, but no, I fancy Lee for tomorrow.
And also, the other thing in this whole situation is the fact that you've not got many games, have you? So it's quite easy to get dragged into something.
Well, that's it. And I think,
or to get out of it.
I looked at all the results in the last few years, and you know, if you lose your first two games, you've got no chance. You know, you're done. No one who's lost the first two games has even got in the £1 million game. And I know both.
That's a real interesting stat. That's something even I hadn't looked at.
Yeah, and it might.
James from Stat Talking.
It might just be a coincidence, but because it's, like I say, it's such a short format, and even with the 23 game format, you look at, say, Widnes last year, and I think Casford maybe last year, they won so many games early doors that even, I mean, not Casford, but Widnes won six of the first seven, and even though they were terrible for the rest of the season, they still finished in the top eight.
Right,
and that's in a 23 game format. Now you're condensing that down even further to seven games, and all of a sudden you're thinking, well, you know, if you've lost the first game, if you don't win this week, like Featherstone don't win this week, they're probably out of it.
Okay.
Like same with Halifax, same with Widnes, to be fair.
Well, we'll touch on those. So I'm going for I think it'll be fairly comfortable for Warrington at home to Catalans. I thought we saw enough of them last week.
Catalans are really lucky, I thought, against London. It amazes me that not more. I'm surprised that not more people are talking about Catalan as potential £1 million game candidates.
Everybody thinks they'll get out of it, don't they?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have just assumed they're going to get out of it. I think the way their fixtures have run has worked quite nicely for them. I can't think who they play next week, but
they're playing against Lee next week.
Yeah, I think the way their fixtures have worked out is okay. They're at home to Lee, aren't they?
Yeah.
But, you know, if they slip up at Lee next week, I mean, obviously we'll talk about this next week, but they could be in trouble, I think. If they lose one of their home games, they're in trouble because you just can't really see them winning away. You know, and they've won two now. They've won two games since McNamara came over. They had that high scoring one against Lee and then that one against London last week.
where it was pipsqueak time, that wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but yeah, no, Warrington win tomorrow, and like I say, Warrington win tomorrow. They're probably done.
I'm gonna go with you. I think Warrington win, and I'm gonna back it with a Lee win as well. To be honest, yeah, let's get a bit of confidence. Yeah. Come on, Lee. Sorry, old Kingston Rovers fans. I'll forgive. Forgive me. Right, Sunday, we've already touched upon both of these games. Halifax against Widnes and London against Featherstone. I have to admit, just starting with London, first of all, very, very impressive last week. You know, for much of that game, you couldn't tell who the Super League side was. I thought that they were very good. Obviously, Andrew Henderson, I've already talked over the course of the season. I've spoke with him at length at times, doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, and again, another honest team, I think, now. You know, for so many years we've had all this fuss around London and needing a London team and all this nonsense that goes on. Forget all that, it's all about the rugby on the pitch, and Andrew Henderson's got them playing a nice brand of rugby. I've seen them a couple of times and they look good. They've got a few good youngsters as well coming through. I know we touched upon a few of them last week. They'll be probably a bit gutted actually about last week, because if they'd have won last week, they've still got four home games. Mm. They'd have been like...
That would have really set the cap.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, if they'd have won last week, all of a sudden you're just thinking, blimey, London could have made it top three. Forget the £1 million game. I don't expect them to have any problems against Featherstone this week. The other game, Halifax Widnes. Widnes are on a rotten run of form, really, and they need to pull something out of the bag from somewhere and quick.
Halifax were really good at Old Kingston Rovers last week, and again, were quite unfortunate to be pipped at the end.
Yeah, and Halifax have got, we talk about momentum, they had a little bit of momentum coming into it from the last few games of the Championship where they picked up some good wins. Again, they were a bit unlucky last week as well. And again, we look at them two games, the Halifax and the London games last week, if they'd have gone different, you know, the whole outlook of this whole competition would have completely changed. Halifax and Widnes, I think if Halifax were to beat Widnes, I think Widnes are in serious, they're in serious trouble of not even making a £1 million game. They played 2 years ago and it was 14-0. I hope it's a better game than that one.
That was a dreadful game, I remember, back in the day. It was
2 years ago.
It was Charlie Runciman's debut. Runciman's debut, scored two tries,
yeah. I think so. It was nil at half time. I think Widnes were 4. I think it was 4-0 with about 4 minutes left, and Widnes got two tries at the end.
Yeah, I mean, Halifax certainly playing some good stuff at the moment. Ben Heaton scored 4 tries last week, so he's certainly a man that Widnes are going to have to watch.
You talked about Liam Finn before. I mean, what about Scott Morrell? I mean,
he does exactly the same job.
And I've seen him play against Widnes where Widnes have not even got hand on him.
Mm. Played in a dinner suit.
Kind of. And that's one of the worries for me for Widnes on Sunday, is if that happens again. You know, look at them 4 tries Heaton's got. They were all basically exactly the same. Mm. They took some finishing, but they all came through Morrell being the playmaker in the middle of the field, picking out runners, spotting weak defenders. You know, and Widnes are, you know, Widnes are really on the back of the game, back against the wall, and Halifax will probably fancy it.
I know I can sense that you're not wanting to call this one, so I will. And I'm actually going to bat Widnes here. I think that the greater experience within the Super League competition, the fact that they've had that tough game against Warrington under the belts, I thought they were good for large parts of the game against Warrington, to be honest. I think they're going to win.
I think Widnes shouldn't have trouble against Halifax and Featherstone, to be honest, and London to an extent. I just think that where they are, I think they're just so low at the moment that they just need that. They just need a win, really, from somewhere.
But any sort of win in this competition can really kick
start to things, can't it? And I think that's... Widnes have got Halifax and Featherstone next 2 games. So I think by the time they play Lee away and Hull KR away, if they've got these 2 wins under the belt, and that's what they did 2 years ago. I think they started with Halifax and Sheffield. Mm-hmm. So they won the first 2 games and then they lost the next 2. But because they'd had that bit of a positive start, that then enabled them to get over the line, and then they won the last 3. Mm-hmm. So it'd be an interesting one. But Halifax, I'm sure, will fancy picking Widnes off.
Okay, let's look at the Kingstown Press Championship Shield. All these games taking place on Sunday. Sunday rugby, never catch on. Dewsbury at home to Toulouse, Oldham at home to Bradford, Batley travelling over to Rochdale, and Sheffield going over to Swinton. That's a game, hopefully, I'll be at myself.
Yeah, the second relegation spot's the main discussion point, isn't it? For this one, you have to remind me what the format is at the end of the top four going to the semis,
semi-finals. So at the moment, if we're just looking at the league table, Toulouse have basically got to lose all of the games not to stand the chance of getting
a home game even
into that top four.
Well, no, they're guaranteed already, aren't they? So
well, there's 8 points between them and second place Batley Bulldogs.
Well, yeah, but to get in the top four, the, what are they there, 17 points, 16 points?
Oh, 14 points, yeah. So,
so lose are in, but it's they're pretty close to getting a home game. But yeah, the relegation, you've got, what, Swinton on 12, Oldham on 11. Rochdale look fairly safe at the moment, but then if Swinton and Oldham both win...
They had that really big loss last week, though, Rochdale, didn't they, against against Dewsbury?
Yeah, there was a few one-sided games last week, wasn't there?
And again, you know, what a job Neil Kelly's doing there. I seem like this is the weekly section of the show where it's the Neil Kelly Appreciation Society, but he's doing...
Well, if you look, we talked about Bradford, Dewsbury were on 0 points when he took over, and Bradford on minus two, and since then Dewsbury have won 9 games, and Bradford have won, what, one? And that's with a part-time team.
Who's the NRL coach or ex-NRL
well,
coach?
Well, and that's the thing, and that just goes to show, is as much as whatever excuses you want to roll out about Bradford, Neil Kelly's managed it at Dewsbury with probably a fraction of the budget.
He's rolled his sleeves up there, hasn't
and
he?
And, you know, and the, what's funny about Dewsbury now, they could end up winning the Championship Shield.
Yeah, what an end to the season that would be.
So
it's like the mid-90s all over again when it took over, isn't it? It'll be Dewsbury domination next season.
Well, hopefully they'll wind up back at Widnes.
Okay, well, seeing as I'm going to lay my neck on the line here, I'm going for... Dewsbury's already beaten Toulouse.
Right.
I think they'll do it again.
Right.
I'm going for an Oldham win against Bradford. I think that, you know, they'll probably take a little bit of confidence. They've got a few players coming back. I think it'll be a close one, don't get me wrong, but I think Oldham might just pick Bradford there. I'm going for Batley to beat Rochdale. I do think that Matt Diskin's side maybe might have a little bit too much in the tank, but strange things have happened. And I'm going for Sheffield, although they're the complete Jekyll and Hyde team for me, Sheffield.
I think I'd agree with you, apart from the last one. I think Swinton will do Sheffield.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think they've got... They think they need to, and I think they've got to that point where the home games are so important.
Okay. See, this is what I like. A bit of difference in opinion. We'll look at these again next week. In the Kingstown Press League One Super 8s, on Saturday evening, Newcastle are at home to Barrow, and then action switches over to Sunday with Doncaster hosting Whitehaven, Toronto travelling over to Keighley, and York at home to Workington. Your thoughts on those four?
Well, obviously, there's this... Obviously, fighting for playoff places at the moment. I don't think it matters a great deal because Barrow and Whitehaven are that far ahead. I think they're pretty much guaranteed the home games in the playoffs, aren't they? It's different, slightly different format this year because last year the top two played and then the loser played in the playoffs, whereas this year top team just goes straight up. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a little bit of a fight. Keighley obviously need the points. Newcastle need the points, to be fair, if they're going to stay in contention, as do Workington. It's almost do or die for Workington this week at York.
Yeah, and you can say the same for Newcastle as well, couldn't you?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I think if Workington lose this week, I think they're pretty much done. But if they win, they'll have a little bit of momentum going forward. Keighley, of course, had a good win against York last week. They'll be open to... Obviously, they've got Toronto in town. They'll be open to see what they can do with them. I think I watched a bit of the Toronto game last week, and it was only 12-0.
Okay.
It was 8-0. After about 34, 35 minutes, and Toronto got an absolute no try given for them. And then before you knew it, it was 18-20-0 at half time.
And that's just what Toronto can do, isn't it?
I felt a bit sorry for Workington. And then in the second half, they just absolutely blew them away. You know, I was a bit disappointed with the try award, but, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Okay. I'm going for a Barrow win at Newcastle. I'm going for Whitehaven to beat Doncaster, although I think that's going to be a close game, to be honest. Toronto, I think, will have a bit too much in the tank for Keighley, although the last game out between those two teams over at Cougar Park was probably one of Toronto's toughest fixtures of the season. It was only again in the last 20 where they were able to get away, and I can see a similar type of thing happening. I'm going for a York home win against Workington, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll match them for, Dave.
Okay. Into the Kingstown Press League One Shield. Gloucestershire Old Golds are at home to Coventry Burghs on Saturday. The same day, London Scholars host Oxford. And Sunday sees North Wales Crusaders at home to Hunslet. And they have had it confirmed it's at Queensway. I know this is what we were talking about, isn't it, with regards to fixtures being arranged at very short notice. And
it's just ridiculous.
With them sharing a stadium like they do.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. And like I say, it fits in with the point of what I was trying to say on the column this week, is that These clubs are expecting people to pay money to watch. They need people to come and pay money to watch the games. They need people to sponsor the games. And it's like, and you can't even tell them where the game's going to be in 5 days. You know, it's like, and it's not, and I know that North Wales, you know, I should point out that it wasn't North Wales' fault. I believe they asked.
Yeah, well,
They informed the RFL that there was issues with the availability. But it's just like, you know, forget all this fixture nonsense. Let's get the fixtures agreed at the start of the season.
This is what happens, though, if you're sharing stadia. And then you're heading off into a transfer of a season.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And we just don't need to do it. And I don't know whether you've seen, I think after our discussion about it last week, I did a blog on the North-South split idea for League One, which I think is the best solution. But whether that happens, I don't know.
You had a bit of an interesting reaction to that as well, didn't you, to be honest, from various sources?
Yeah, we had, I think there was a Hemel fan, I think, who'd commented about it, saying that they'd been put off by it all. Because, I mean, don't forget, I mean, we touched on this again last week, that the expansion teams at the bottom are just getting battered every week, or most weeks. They're winning two games a season, and it's like, how are you going to get new rugby league fans coming to watch a team win, you know, lose 15 out of 17 matches?
Okay. Right, well, Gloucestershire All Goals, they did announce earlier in the week that Lee Greenwood would be stepping down from his position come the end of the season. I think he's done a good job there. He's certainly raised the profile of the game in that
Yeah,
area.
And I think, to be fair, All Goals are one of them teams that they've improved, but they've
proactive
not really got...
as well.
Yeah, they've not really got anything to show for it. And it's not their fault. I think it's just the way that the system is. And it's like, that's why I think that if we split it into North and South, all of a sudden you could say, well, they'll be called League One South champions. You know, if they think, I know Scholars are above them, but, you know, if they got to a point, and I think you just need to give that carrot for these expansion teams or the Southern teams to have something to play for. You know, I think for me, because at the moment it's like, what have all got, you know, as much as they've improved and they're sat in mid-table, you know, what have they got to show for it? And it'd be good to give teams like that something to sort of cling on to and push forward for.
Okay. Sunday. Well, I'll tell you what, let me go through who I fancy, you know. So I'm going for a Gloucestershire All Golds win against Coventry. I'm going for London Scholars victory against Oxford. I'm going for Hunslet just to pip North Wales Crusaders. I think they might have just a little bit much in the tank, although I hope that Crusaders proved me wrong, to be honest. And South Wales, I'm going for another victory for them. I think that they've now they've actually
yeah,
got
I think
the home base.
Yeah, I think and obviously got a bit more of a gelled team together. Yeah, I think South Wales will win. I think North Wales will win as well.
Okay, so
because I think North Wales have got to win really to keep alive this League One Shield, whatever it is. League One Shield.
It needs to happen, doesn't I think, it? You know, I mean, obviously.
I mean, Gloucester have still got a chance of getting up there, so
they have. But at the moment, it's Hunslet and London Scholars who find themselves in that position, isn't it, to play off for it.
Yeah, all these ridiculous trophies that are getting contrived, but yeah.
Oh, this sounds like another...
No,
like
I'm,
another
not, no I'm not getting into it. No,
who
not
are you upsetting next
not,
week?
I'm not getting into it. Not getting into it.
Right, you may be wondering, I'm in Middle East gear. This is my destination for the weekend this evening. Manchester Rangers are at home to the East in the Northwest Men's League Division 2, and arguably Manchester Rangers have the best facilities in the entire amateur structure because they're playing at the Manchester Regional.
Yeah, it's nice. I've been there a couple of times. It's nice.
Yeah,
you could see a championship team playing there, definitely.
Yeah, I wonder where the Salford will play there. You never know.
It's blue, though, isn't it? It's blue sheets.
They could paint them.
Yeah, I think if you could get a League One team in there, it's a really good facility.
Yeah, it's cracking set up. I was there the other week when Oldham hosted Batley.
Yeah, I'd just say it's a great facility. And, you know, if you've got a team in there, hopefully one of the Arabs from Man City would would notice what was going on and maybe sink a bit of money in.
Right, you've had our thoughts on how we think it's going to pan out. Now it's your turn. Don't forget you can comment. Let us know your thoughts on this particular broadcast. And we'll be back again next week on Love Rugby League Weekly.